Everyone's been waiting, everybody's hoping for the Star Eye time to come back, and here it is with Brandon Dave.
Oh man, you almost couldn't go any higher.
You didn't think I could, but alas, here I am.
It wasn't so much your range as much as your breath that I was concerned with on that one.
Oh,
that single note.
Don't be mean.
No, Brad. You really did go the distance on it. That's what I'm getting at here.
Thank you.
Proved all of us wrong, including me.
Now, a lot of people are really happy because we're back. Let me give a little bit of insight. We've been gone for a little while, and we realized we want to come back. The best way to do the start time for us is to do it in what we're calling seasons. So we're calling this Season 3 of Starry Time, and it is a joy to be back. I'm Bran.
And I'm your Dave.
You are my Dave. Dave, tonight is a doozy. It's a good one to be back on, and it's a long one, but it's worth the entire listen, if I do say so myself, and I do say so.
Yes, I agree so.
Now, Dave, tell the people out there that have been waiting for us to be back how excited you are to be back on a scale of 1 to 10.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 9.999.
That was beautiful. Now, a couple of things real fast. You will want to tune in. We're going to be releasing an episode every Wednesday. There's going to be 10 of them. That's going to be Season 3. But you can also go back and listen to the first couple of seasons of Star Time in the meantime. And we're really excited to be back. Today we've got Chad and Alta Dillard. They are the authors of Abducted in the French Quarter, a fantastic read. We'll get to them in just a second. But first, here's the news with Steve.
He's back.
For Starrytime News, this is Steven. Was a UFO again sighted in the U.S.? According to ArcDev Gosol, on August 25th, a green fireball was seen over dozens of states in the eastern United States, and fear and speculation engendered among the locals was that it was, once again, a UFO. Controversial footprints suggest that human-like creatures may have roamed Crete nearly 6 million years ago. How old is humanity exactly? Many would say they're not quite sure, but the British Happisburg footprints discovered in 2013 suggest our genus may have wandered the globe nearly a million years ago. Stories of a storm of strange radio bursts emerges from deep space. Astronomers recently caught 15 blasts of radio waves coming from a mysterious object about 3 billion light years away. It's not clear exactly what the object is, but a radio burst commonly known as FRB-12-1102, which has been present in the past, has turned on again, sending a burst of fleeting but extremely powerful blasts of radio waves. Be sure to follow this story closely, as developments may be soon arising. And last but not least, a very big congratulations to Seth Breedlove, who won Cryptozoologist of the Year in 2017. The conference was filled with many great top-notch talks and ended with a showing of the new documentary, The Mothman of Point Pleasant, which was shot and edited by Seth Breedlove. He was given the award for, quote, dedicating the beginning of his remarkable filmmaking career to documenting the vanishing mid-century's legacy of cryptid encounters. Once again, for Starrytime News, this is Steven.
Dave, it's a great day for the Starry Time podcast, and I think you know why it is.
Because it's back.
Well, we are back, but also, just, Dave, it's not often that you and I bond over a book that we love, and this is the case
today.
That's
a great point.
Yeah.
It's also not the case that we both read.
Yeah, that's so true. Dave, tell people a little bit about our guest today, if you don't mind.
Well, we have with us today Chad and Alta, who are pretty much, they've got a pretty crazy story, and I don't want to give away too much, but I'll just say that after reading their book, they have one extreme situation that they describe in here, but along the way it's just riddled with all kinds of stuff that's happened. It seems like they've just lived very wholesome lives, if you consider strange things happening wholesome.
Right.
At least that's what they highlight in the book, and it's pretty awesome to see just how they connect it all and how they've kind of drawn the line in the dots to get to what is just an insane climax, I guess, in the story. So today we have them on to ask them about that and to get firsthand the account of what happened in a little town called New Orleans.
That's exactly right. The book is called Abducted in the French Quarter. Our guests are Chad and Alta. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, and thank you very much for having us.
Absolutely.
Yes, it's such an honor. It's an honor for both of us. We both thank you.
Now, I'm sure you guys have been on a lot of shows like this and have told this story a million times. Are you sick of telling this story yet?
Oh, no, never. We enjoy sharing our story, our experiences, and, you know, that way, you know, people out there that have had strange experiences, maybe they'll come out of the closet or at least feel comfortable and not think that they're crazy or, you know, alone.
Yeah. Now, Dave and I started this podcast because we are skeptics. We've never had experiences ourselves, but we love talking to people like you guys who say that you've had experiences because to us, stories are some of the most powerful things. Those are the things that can really change someone's mind more than a bunch of statistics or numbers. So I'm excited to hear your story. I'd love for you guys to get started and just kind of tell where it all happened.
And Alton and I both are skeptics.
Really? Even after everything you've gone through?
Oh yeah. I mean, we're our own worst. You know, we always had doubts and stuff, but you know, we knew that until we had our own experiences. You know,
neither one of us had an interest in this area of what other people are calling aliens, ETs, what have you. That's not language that I've ever used. And, you know, Chad certainly has his own thoughts and his own reactions to these experiences that he certainly, I feel, is, you know, very good at sharing with folks his truth. And that's all that we are doing is just offering our truth. But prior to 1995, I would say, was the awakening moment. Prior to that, and of course it began way before 1995, but prior to that, neither one of us had any interest.
Yeah.
And anything called out there.
Now, can you talk a little bit about your upbringings? Like, were you brought up to kind of be open-minded and maybe this is something, or was it just kind of you bumped into these things as you were growing up?
The bumped in makes me giggle. Mm-hmm. In my case, I'm 10 years older than Chad.
Okay.
I happened to be born in the late 50s of the deserts of Arizona, of mixed native blood, and my mom, for lots of reasons, and I think, and a lot of mystery in her past, my mother is no longer with us physically, so I can't ask her any of these questions. And I don't have any other family besides Chad to ask questions of, so I've been left with a lot of mystery in my life. But apparently my mother indicated to a few people in our lives that, you know, when I'm 6 months old, which would have made this the very late 50s, she claims during daytime she was crossing a desert. She was driving, and I'm the only passenger in the car. And that ultimately, she says that a small metallic craft came down out of the sky and stopped her on the road. Now, the few times that I heard my mother trust somebody enough to tell that to was so ridiculous and so embarrassing to me. Mm. And the furthest thing from the truth was my mom was not crazy, but I certainly was thinking she was crazy.
Yeah.
So I always left the room embarrassed. And the point is I never challenged her, nor did anyone else. So I don't have any more information other than just to say there's a lot of mystery. And it would seem to begin, if true what my mom said, you know, in my world from the beginning. And then Chad's had, you know, a brief experience in his childhood.
Yeah, we had some very strange burnt circles. My dad was a farmer in the Delta of Arkansas, so we had this soybean field, and there was some unexplained, you know, crop circle kind of burnt in the crop. So that was pretty strange, and then throughout my, you know, when I was a kid, I was in and out of church. So, you know, there was not a lot of, you know, talk of aliens.
Right.
Yeah. Until we got to high school, you know, and then, you know, Star Wars came along. But, you know, never anything, you know, it was more sci-fi, not, you know, alien chasing or sky watching or anything like that.
And in my case, I had no interest even in Star Wars. Now, my mother was just the opposite. She loved all of that. And it often said that if she was ever given an opportunity, she'd love to go into space. But again, that was not an interest on my part at all. So again, I just thought she was crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was, so the essence is, I don't know about, you know, the word skeptic is such an interesting word, because I feel Chad and I are really, as bizarre as this sounds, the strongest skeptics that we know.
Yeah.
Maybe besides you both.
That's interesting. We interviewed a gentleman named Dr. David Jacobs in the past, and he mentioned something really interesting, which was that pretty much all abductions that he's done research on, you can trace it back generationally. So there's some sort of generational thing there when it comes to abductions, which I just think is really interesting. And the fact that you, in your case, Alta, can kind of back that up with your mother seems to have had a situation, and you do as well. It's just interesting that that's something that he has found, but also that is true of you guys. So the science is, or, you know, the research is backing you up, which is interesting.
You know, if nothing else, at least anecdotal, which I'm sorry to say is, what seems to be in most cases anecdotal information, but again, just repeating our truth. And, you know, in Chad's case, again, him sharing this, his family being so baffled by these circles. And again, who knows? There's just been not answers. So that seems to be our beginning, if you will, of that kind of a connection. And then if it's good for you all, we'll just kind of keep this moving forward to kind of keep it in context.
Yeah.
So if we might, then I had a lot of mystery in my early childhood. I don't want to inundate this conversation, but again, just keeping it in the reference of what we're talking about. I didn't have any childhood memories before the age of 9. And my first memory is I am being tested for what they call ESP, in a military hospital in Aurora, Colorado, that went
by the
name of...
And that's extrasensory perception, right?
Right. And so this was in a hospital called Fitzsimmons Military Hospital, in Aurora, Colorado, that I understand has just changed locations only in the last year or so. Now, when this happened to me, this would have been in the 60s. And my understanding is we lived very close to this location at the time. And it was my mother, myself, and my stepfather, who had apparently come into our lives when I was about 5. But again, I don't remember those things. So my first memory is this very bizarre memory, of course. Never talked about. Never. It kind of goes blank for me after having that first memory. Because next thing I know, we are now relocated into the Midwest. I spend about 10 years in the Midwest, which is extremely wholesome. I'm around cornfields and, you know, city, and just very kind of old-fashioned and very wholesome kind of upbringing. School, high school, then my first years of college. Don't remember anything so unusual. It seemed whatever normal is, I felt like I had it as close as possible. There was a lot of trauma in the family. My stepfather died when I was 15. Mm. He died at home with cancer. My mother and I went through an awful lot in regards. I was only 15 and I was his caregiver. Mm. And I mean, it was just, you know, it was a very interesting life.
Sure.
But I wouldn't, and I had some experiences with what I call ghosties and just kind of baby talk it, because it seemed to not be that strange to me. And so anyhow, that was my, you know, my childhood up through my young adulthood, if you will. Mm-hmm. The reason I, you know, spent the time kind of giving you that background is that I got reunited only in the last few years with a few of my friends from those days. So this would have been 30-year reunited. One of them was 40 years, hadn't seen in 40 years. And, what I discovered in the, there were about three of them in particular, three girls, three women. What we discovered, though, is that when we got reunited and we were going down memory lane, they were all to remind me that we were either having encounters together with something otherworldly, or they were having their own private encounters. And I certainly took note of that. Now, they didn't seem to have any interest in exploring it any further than them relaying their experiences to me. But again, you know, that really took me back.
Sure.
And because, of course, I'd have never had any idea if we'd have never been reunited after all those years. So then, if I might, I'll get us to 1990.
Sure.
At that time in 1990, I'm 33, and at that time, Chad's 23. Age difference.
Right.
We, Chad is from Little Rock, Arkansas. I'm originally from a reservation area of Arizona. My mother had moved to Little Rock, Arkansas, and had become what I consider a self-made woman. She had become widowed and went to college. Clinton was one of my mother's law professors for a semester when he was attorney general for the state. So, you know, my mom had she had the opportunity of working very hard for, you know, having an opportunity to have good employment, somewhat appointed by him. And so she lived what I considered a very classic, self-made kind of life, and was a very open woman. I call her my do-gooders. You know, my mom struggled very hard for the rights of people, all people. And it was very important to her kind of personality, but she also was a very open type of person. So this is how I was raised for the most part. Well, I had been out of state for many years and I had come back. And I was staying with my mom. And as I said, I was 33. I'd been working in the medical profession. I left a hands-on kind of environment in a hospital to take a new job. And it happened to be in medical equipment. It was a job that I absolutely was not qualified for at all, because I am not technical at all. Right. You know, I barely know how to handle a phone now as it is.
Hey, you're Skyping great, though.
Oh, thanks. That's Chad. We give Chad all the credit where credit is due.
Well, good job. Either way.
Go, Chad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I couldn't. Oh, boy. I couldn't do anything without him, I swear. So I get this crazy job. I am miserable. I'm a very unhappy camper. And I'm not dating anybody. And I was just all on my own. And I felt like I was sinking. I was having a lot of internal sinking. And it happened to be on Valentine's Day, working with, and I'll hand this off for Chad to share with you kind of how that day began, if you will.
Sure.
That would be cool, because we've already kind of, in the book, I remember seeing it from your perspective, so it would be cool to see how his view is on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, Valentine's, you know, afternoon, and I had kind of a, it was catering company in the daytime, but I also worked at a oyster bar at night. It was a real trendy kind of hole in the wall. And, a buddy of mine calls me up. He goes, "Hey man, what are you doing for, you know, tonight? I got this girl I want you to meet." I'm like, I'm sorry, man. You know, I got to work tonight. I said, they'll kill me if I call in, you know. I'm like, you know, tonight's a big night, you know, Valentine's, you know, we're going to be busy. I can't call. "Well, I really want you to meet her, you know, son." You know, and I was interested, so, you know, that was great. We hung up the phone, you know, we would talk again. I go on to work that night. The place I worked at was nothing but guys. The lady that owned it only hired guys, you know. It was the opposite of Hooters. Yeah. You know? But, so.
What a weird thing.
Yeah. Well. We all get off work that night, and the guys are like, "Let's go play darts. Let's go play darts." You know, we had dates. So we left. We went over. We went to a place that I'd never been. So, and instead of going and playing darts with my buddies, I go off by myself, and I'm going to go play pinball. Look over, and I see this, you know, lady sitting at the bar. So I walk over and ask her if she would like to play pinball. And she kind of looked at me funny and said, you know, I hate pinball, but I'll play a game with you. So she came over and we played a game of pinball. And she, you know, I asked her if she wanted to play again. She said, yeah. She goes, well, what's your name? I said, Chad. She goes, what, do you know a guy named David? I'm like, yeah. She said, did he call you today? And I'm like, yeah. Well, I'm Alta. I'm the one that you were supposed to meet tonight. So we were essentially a blind date that didn't happen, that happened anyway.
That's great.
So, that's great.
Yeah, it was mind blowing for sure.
And if I'll interject at this point, there was or weird or what have you of that category. I call all of that high strangeness. That's a term I borrowed a long time ago, and it's just worked perfectly for my purposes of trying to describe any of this craziness. So there was tremendous high strangeness involved in making sure that I ended up in that location also.
Yeah.
Because I had never been there before either. So the fact that we both end up in a city the size of Little Rock, Arkansas at the time, which was over 200,000, somewhere between 200,000-300,000 people.
Oh, wow.
Had lots of clubs, had lots of restaurants. And so the fact that we end up in the same location with a lot of high strangeness on my part, prior to that, there's no doubt at that point I used the word arranged, because I'm positive now that Chad and I are arranged. I have a
quick question. Sure. Kind of in the book, you explain a little bit more about that, the high strangeness that went into getting you there. And you allude to these two gentlemen, these two pilots, and that you met and that you showed around. And one of the things you say that you kind of just skim by, and so I wanted to touch on, you mentioned that there wasn't an airport around there, and so you just thought that was weird. Do you think there was something to it? Do you think that those were do you think those guys were real? What do you make of that situation now, looking back at it?
Right. Well, just very briefly, they were beyond handsome. Whatever that word means, they were. They looked like male models, and then some. One
just
was
like
very
just calm. Like Chad.
Exactly. Exactly. One was very blonde and one had very dark hair. The blonde wore a leather bomber jacket and said to me that he was the private pilot. And again, we're talking about in an area and environment where there are no airports, nor was there anybody of money enough to have, it was an old neighborhood, to have, you know, even a private airport. So it turned out to me that there was something so much more to that than meets the eye, in terms of who they were or what they were.
Sure.
Right.
I've kind of applied the term otherworldly to them, the situation, because again, there's just so much mystery. Let me, if I may, just finish that again. We love the questions. We love questions. We never get enough of those.
Yeah.
Within 24 hours of Chad and I, in my terms, were arranged. You know, we were drawn to each other and my mood shifted dramatically from being very sour and sad and what have you to, I was just a very happy little girl. I felt like a teenager and it was so much fun. And we hung and we just had a great time with each other. And we discovered within 24 hours of this that his grandfather, Chad's grandfather, who had passed on prior to me meeting Chad, his name, his birth name, and I share the same identical name, which is, of course, the first name is Alta. And his last name is Duncan, and that's my mother's name. So once I discover that Chad's grandfather and I share the same identical name, that tweaked me so badly inside, because I'd already had so much mystery in my life that I didn't need anything like that on top of it. So I led Chad on, you know, throughout the day that everything was just perfect. But inside, I'm trying to find a way to escape. I'm trying to figure out how to exit and not be seen again, because I was just so uncomfortable. And I just felt like I had a hidden hand kind of controlling me, and I didn't like it.
Would you describe that as like a time that you were denying it? Or were you scared of it? Or was it something more like you knew it was true and you just didn't want to like get him involved? Because in the book, you mentioned that like you kind of were trying to, I don't know, almost seemed like there was like a level of protection you were trying to give.
Absolutely.
But I don't know if that was, I don't know which one of those two, or maybe it was a combination of those two things.
Right. I would say, you know, or all of the above, you know, yeah. In so many ways. Chad and I chose, we married a year after the arrangement, our meeting, our mm-hmm. blind date. You know, we married a year later in 91. And in that course of time, we agreed that we would never have children. And I know from my standpoint, it was definitely coming from that deep part of mystery that I'd never liked having in my life. And I couldn't get answers. Mm-hmm. And right, yeah. There is that form of, I've always been, in an essence, overprotective of Chad. And I have no idea why.
I remember a couple of things that Alta first told me when we first met. And one was, she couldn't wait until she was 40 because she knew that something life-altering was going to happen to her, and she couldn't wait. And the other thing was that when she was small, she always knew, or this voice came to her and said, "You will never mother your own, but you will mother many."
Huh.
So it's just kind of one of those, I guess she would always have very strange thoughts and dreams when she right. was a child. This was two things that, and you know, no woman wants to be 40.
Except me.
Well, I remember you mentioning that later in the book that you, or kind of on the, when you were almost about to turn 40, you mentioned that you were kind of excited about it, but I didn't know. So all the way back during this time, you were already talking about it?
How excited this you were? This was something that she had told me when we first. So, I mean, obviously she knew this before we were.
Right. Yeah. So I was 33, of course, and 34 when we married. And so, you know, I was apparently priming for 6 years in advance.
Yeah.
Of this life-altering excitement. And just never hesitated of repeating it to the point of sounding ridiculous.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's so interesting, though, that it was that early that you had already kind of been having that anticipatory, like, perspective on things. Pretty cool.
Right.
But so if you want to move on from there, do you want to bring, discuss anything about the other friend that was there and how that might have affected, or I don't know if that would, that's just because it's in the book. I don't know if you wanted to get into that at all.
Oh, right. Well, I appreciate it. We neglected to mention in the beginning, our book has been edited down to the size that what you've received, what we call the small book.
Sure.
Somebody just recently was very kind and calls it a well-compact book. That was never our intention. It was chosen by the editor to do so. They felt it was important to get it around the title of the book, you know, to keep it primarily around the title.
Right.
So the fact is we do have so much more going on in our lives. So we intend, if there is interest, to try to fill those blanks in with a few more small books, I pray, in the future to, you know, help people to understand this in a fuller context. But in the beginning, I had worked in the medical profession, as I mentioned, and I worked with a young woman that happened to be the same age as I was, and she had never been married and had no children either. So we were kind of like dinosaurs that just found each other and kind of clung to each other. And we partied a lot with each other. We worked hard and we partied hard. And, you know, again, not answering to anybody. It was, it made for a quick relationship and, you know, maybe not so healthy in the big picture. But ultimately, we discover when Chad and I are arranged that all three of us know each other. She knows Chad separately. And then, of course, her and I know each other. So that seemed very interesting and convenient. And she only lived a mile away from where Chad and I decided to move in with each other. So we were very close. And as it would happen, within 3 months of us moving in with each other and starting to create a life with each other, and it really a very joyous time for both of us, our friend was murdered.
Hmm.
And you know, there is no good to any of that kind of word, murdered, but it was horrendous what happened to her. Yeah. And Chad and I, just to keep it as simple as we can, seem to somehow or other get under the gauge of the police and the detectives. And let me just say this, that they absolutely turned our lives upside down and inside out. And I might also add, Chad and I never had the opportunity to grieve our friend. Mm. Our lives were completely, I feel, taken away from us under this microscope that was so insane. So I'll also mention it took 20 years for that murder to be solved, but that murder was solved in 2010 by DNA. And that monster
must have been such a relief.
You can't even imagine, and thank you for even imagining that for us. I'll never forget it. When I got word that this had happened, I called Chad. He was driving long distance. I called him. The moment I said, "Chad, it's over," that's all I had to say to him. It's been solved. Something like that. Very few words. I remember Chad pulling off of the highway, and I remember Chad taking a big breath, and then I remember Chad and I started to cry.
Yeah.
And we cried very hard. And then we were able to breathe. And it was very big. It was big for both of us. And as I said, that monster is, you know, serving a long prison sentence. And so that was, but there was a tremendous amount of mystery about her death and all of the high strangeness that was involved around that craziness as well. So, you know, a big part of our story that, again, a lot of that has been edited out. And thank the heavens again that that has been solved. And
yeah.
So if we might, then we'll move forward to 1995.
Yes.
My mother has left Arkansas and she's relocated to kind of the swamp areas of Louisiana. Chad and I were living out of state. She let us know that she had made this move and she asked if we were interested in joining her. So we were. We relocated to Louisiana. So at this time now, Chad and I are living in a kind of a boondocks area outside of a community called Hammond, Louisiana, which is a small college or small university town. I'll have Chad now share with you kind of what happened to us in that location, which is what really started to change everything for him and I. Now, this is 1995.
Sure. Please.
Got it.
Yeah. We were coming into town for dinner one evening. It was still pretty light outside, you know, so it wasn't too late. We start coming into town, and we go around this bend of trees, and back behind the bend of trees is a bend in the road, and then there's this group of trees, and back behind the group of trees is this local Walmart shopping center. And as we come around the bend and around this group of trees, you know, they were kind of tall pines, and we look up in the sky, and there's this craft. And it is huge. It's low to the ground. It's way beyond below cloud level. It's bigger than the shopping center, the parking lot, everything combined. I mean, it's like stadium, like football. Yeah, I've never been up against a battleship, but I mean, it seems like it would be something that big.
Sure.
Just
wow.
Huge.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah, it was dark as far as the craft. It was very dark. It was black almost and very kind of it was kind of like a rectangle, but it wasn't as wide on one end as the other. It had it unlike the less wide end, it had like two or three lights, and then on the wider side it had like, you know, one or two extra, so you know, it had three or four lights. And moving very, very, very slow. Now, there's other people on the highway, other people on the road, but, you know, nobody's reacting, nobody's pulling over, nobody's pointing into the sky, and neither are we. You know, we both kind of look up. It's on the left-hand side of the road. We look up. I look down at Alta, because I'm driving. I look at Alta. Alta looks at me. I look back up at it for a little, just another quick glance, And it was automatically, I just kind of focused my attention back on the road. Like, okay, if we don't look at it, if we don't see it, it won't see us.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. It was like, okay, nothing going on here, yada, yada. You know, hey, I didn't see nothing, you know. We went on dinner that night. I don't remember ever speaking about it or talking about it. The next morning, we get up and we either see it in news somewhere that this has that other people have seen this and reported seeing craft in the sky above Hammond. But again, you know, we kind of looked at each other like, well, we're not crazy. But again, we never spoke about it. We didn't, you know, we weren't like, you know,
looking. It just was basically a non-event for us because we both were in shock.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what she's essentially saying, just to get the impact of what that did to us. So we leave that area relatively shortly after having this experience that we are not talking about, nor are we addressing. And we move to the French Quarter, which is about an hour away. That turned into a whole nother ball of wax, as they say, with all kinds of unbelievable paranormal type of stuff. It was the classic, which you'd almost imagine. And Chad and I were not imagining because we were extremely naive when we moved to the Quarter. I come from a Native background. Even though I'm not raised with the people, my mother, I have my regalia, and I've been raised with somewhat of the tradition, and Chad's raised Southern Baptist in Arkansas. We have fairly strong foundations, and let me just suggest voodoo and hoodoo and witchcraft and vampire and werewolves and what have you are not in our wheelhouse. That's not our... Right. So that's what we end up moving into.
Right. I always tell people, I've been to New Orleans once in my life, and I always say I've never felt like darkness like I did the first time that I drove through New Orleans. There was just something about it, and I think it was kind of what you were alluding to there. It's just that there's a feeling around the city. As cool as the city is, there's still like this overwhelming sense of, I don't know how else to explain it, but darkness. It's just interesting.
Right. That describes, I think that just describes it beautifully. We, again, thank goodness we were naive, because I'm sure this is how we've managed to survive so much of what we've gone through. But we end up due to circumstances of French Quarter is very expensive to live in. Of course, we don't know that either, and we're not prepared for that. So we end up living on the outskirts of the Quarter. It's about 13 blocks square, I guess. And so we're on the perimeter of the Quarter, the last street over. And we end up in a small apartment above what we understand is the original voodoo temple of the Quarter.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So, oh boy. So, you know, that was a very eye-opening experience for both of us, dealing with ghosties. I had a time slip experience with what could have been, or what appeared to be, a Virgin Mary-like apparition involving also what very well could have been slaves that had lived in the slave quarters on this property from the early 1800s, we understand, or several hundred years ago. That property has been, I thought it was in the 1700s, but we've just discovered that particular location, I understand, was built in 1829, I believe is the date. So these were the original structures, which had slave quarters and what have you. So she's got a chicken coop with chickens. right. I mean, it's like something like we've just stepped right into a movie. And speaking of, anytime that a movie needed to be made out of Hollywood that had anything to do with voodoo, hoodoo, or what have you, they contracted with this property to make their movies. So now we're dealing with movie companies, which was not fun. Most of the time when you're trying to get in and out of your apartment and you're dealing with little movie stars and big egos and, you know, cameras and all of that kind of craziness. So Chad, if you're interested, we'll have Chad share with you. He had a very specific experience with, I call it ghosty, but Chad's very clear on who it is to share.
I'd love to.
Yeah, I actually believe it's the voodoo priest that was there. Now, he had died recently before we had moved into the complex, but we never knew him or anything like that. But this was like the first week we were there, I believe. And I'm laying there in bed, so I'm laying horizontal, and I kept feeling like something was crawling across my chest. So I'd wake up and I'd scratch, and I'd wake up and I'd scratch. And this happened, you know, throughout the night 4 or 5 times. And I get up the next morning and I had scratched, you know, a couple of layers of skin. And, you know, thinking about it, if there's something crawling across your chest, you know, if it's a bug or whatever, it's going to be in different places. It's not going to be in that same exact spot. So I go on to work, and this vision starts coming back to me. And, you know, that throughout from night before. And what I remember is this very kind of very African-y looking black man with, I could only see him from his waist up. From his waist down was kind of a misty, cloudy kind of thing. And but he had no shirt on, very short fro, and he would take his finger and he would tickle it right on my chest, kind of right around my heart area. And I'd go up and I'd scratch. And when I go up to scratch, he would pull away. And again, this happened 4 or 5 times throughout the night. Well, I get home from work, and out to being Native American, we've always had the burn, you know, with the sage and the sweetgrass and everything. So, and Alta wasn't at home at the time, but I get home and I grab that the burn, and I light it up, and I mean, I got the smoke just to bellow, and I got it going, you know. And I'm like, hey, you know, it's cool. You know, I don't know who you are, I said, but I'm going to paint this apartment, and I'm going to clean it up. We're going to have us a nice little apartment. Just leave me alone. Leave us alone. You know, you can stick around. You ain't got to go, but just leave us alone. Never had any other problems with that.
If only everybody could just give their ghost a talking to and straighten them out like that.
Yeah. You know, later, another couple had moved into kind of a small efficiency apartment down below us. And they had been married by the voodoo priest. Again, he had died before we moved in there, so we never. So they're showing us their wedding pictures. And she goes, oh, and here's priest such and such. And I can't remember his name. Here's priest such and such. And they hand me the picture. And I'm like, oh, no way. And I told them the story that I just told you guys. And they're like, yep, that sounds exactly like something he would do. You know, he would test you, trickster. You know, he would test you and make sure, you know, that you were okay to be in his presence or hang around in his, you know, in his space. So that was kind of my French Quarter, New Orleans
introduction. And if we might then, again, just for time's sake, for you all to investigate or look at for yourself, I've been doing a lot of study here recently of, so we lived in that apartment in 1995. And then if you'll fast forward to Hurricane Katrina in 2005,
yeah,
a young couple moved into our apartment by the name of Zach and Addie. Well, Zach and Addie apparently, there's a lot to the story. I'll leave it to you all to, you know, look into if you're interested. Apparently, they were very good alcoholic and drug addicts, as well as well-liked young couple that refused to leave the French Quarter during Katrina. They refused to evacuate. Hmm. So they hung out and just had the time of their lives because, you know, they were young and they were partiers and everything was at their taking. And they also, I understand, were extremely helpful for folks as well, trying to help those that, you know, needed help also and what have you. So they're well liked. They become a bit of celebrity. And then Katrina is over and the world is starting to move back and the lights are on again. So their world is changing because now they've got to join, as they say, the real world. And they fall apart. And apparently, to speed the story up, he kills her in that apartment. And he, our understanding is that she lied dead in that apartment for a week.
Ugh.
He wrote all kinds of insane graffiti all over the walls, all over the appliances, what have you. He dismembered her. Mm. We'll get back to that here in a moment. The way this is all discovered is after this killing, he goes to one of the local hotels in the middle of the quarter to the rooftop to go party. He goes up to the rooftop. He's drinking. He's up there, I understand, for a long time, listening to the band that's playing. And then he just very casually, from the way it's reported, walks over to the edge of the roof and jumps off.
Wow.
Right. When he hits the ground, of course, he splats because it is a long way down. And there's a note and the apartment key in his pocket for the detectives, the police. He's guiding them straight to the apartment. So, of course, when they get to the apartment, they discover her head is in a pot cooking on the stove.
Ugh.
Parts of her body in the oven, and her other parts of her body are in the refrigerator. Now, some author came out of New York City, moved to the French Quarter, and he's written a best-selling book called Shake Off the Devil, I believe is the title of the book. Either Shake Off the Devil or Shake the Devil Off. And for any of you to look at that, you will see pictures of that apartment and this insanity and the deep details that don't ever seem to make any indication that there's any spiritual anything going on there, any kind of anything connected with the voodoo going on there, that this guy just had issues and decided to take him out on her. So I find that very fascinating for what Chad and I have both experienced in that property and in that apartment. And like Chad's saying, and other people as well, having some very unbelievable experiences. So this happened 10 years after we lived there. Now, Chad and I have just returned to the New Orleans in 2001. So we've been gone 15 years. We've only returned this last year. And wouldn't you know, when we returned this year, that apartment, that voodoo temple burned down.
Mm. Wow.
So, right, on a 10-year plan, this has been seeming to unfold itself, and just as bizarre as all the rest of it.
Amazing. That's wild.
Like you could write another book just about that place.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're going to do. You know, we've got kind of our, what people are calling our main event, is this story about our abduction. But we want to do another book or two on these smaller events, or I don't want to say smaller, but these other events, you know, with and different things that, you know, that way they don't get confused, I guess. Or
And know, also, you know. this is the reality of what we're experiencing. I'd like to just mention also, before we go any further, it was never our intention, not ever, our intention to add another book to the world of books. It seems like that's what everybody does, is writes a book. And that was never, never our intention, nor were we ever going to be public about any of this. We happened to be asked by somebody several years ago that we understood was an investigator, claimed to be a UFO, alien, abduction, ET, what have you, an investigator who claimed they wanted to investigate us. They spoke to us a couple times long distance on the phone. They heard what we're sharing with you, and then they decided they had a small radio podcast that they wanted to bring us on their show. We didn't understand that, but we were not going to question this person because we thought they were the authority. They brought us on their show. We told them exactly as we're sharing with you, and then they were basically done with us after that was over with. There was no more further there was no investigation. And so at that point, I didn't feel we had any other option. It was at that point I felt we had to keep going public to either, our intention was always to try to get help, whatever that means, and also to try to find others, because mm-hmm. we knew we weren't the only ones going through this insanity. So that was how this all began. Now that this little book has been put out, we just intend now to try to just keep it going and having people understand to the best of our ability all that we can.
Yeah.
And right. the connection. And leave it to the world to try to figure it out, because we have no answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, before we dive into the big climax of the book, do you mentioned that you want people to kind of connect with it. Have you heard from people who have reached out to you that read your story and thought, wow, that's really similar to my story?
Only a time or two, but we have felt very blessed when they have felt the courage to do it. And even right. if it wasn't, even if it wasn't really too much like ours, you have to admit, you know, now you're only getting portions of it in this particular book. But if you've seen our bio, you know, we have just such a full range of stuff, these anomalies that we've been dealing with. So we kind of cover, it seems like, all bases. Yeah. And so we have felt blessed that there have been a couple of times, you know, a few folks who just absolutely had nowhere else to turn, who've been holding this all these years because they knew that they'd be hauled off to a nut house or worse if they told their families or told anybody. So, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, in that regards, it has certainly been worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, kind of leading up to where we are now, you've kind of, I think, laid the foundation for how interesting the events were that led up to, or the incidents of high strangeness, as you called them, have led you to this moment being in New Orleans, and kind of each of you having been primed a little bit for what's going on. Actually, I think it might be a good thing for Alta. Do you want to go into anything about what you were kind of doing for your job up until that point, just so we can kind of get the third person involved that was involved
right,
in this?
Right. Yeah. So I started becoming a professional reader once I moved to New Orleans. And, you know, this was a portion of my life I'd always avoided and I tried to ignore, having what others might call psychic abilities. That's a word I've always rejected, because to me, I don't see much difference in whatever that's about with me than other folks. But in my case, what happens is I discover that, you know, I'm in a community where people come from all over the world to have this kind of experience. So I end up getting involved in this business. I go to work for a family-owned business that started their business in 1929. They have kept it in the family. So at the point I come on board, they've been in business for 70 years.
That's incredible.
In the French Quarter. Incredible. They handled folks from all over the world. And I'm talking about folks from royalty to every sports phenom to all walk of life. Some of the, you know, the meekest of the meek of the humans, as well as the wealthiest, seemed to come through the doors of this shop. And they mm-hmm. ran a very tight business, if you will. They kept it very controlled. And so I did quite well for them. And they were pleased to have me on board. I was pleased to have a safe environment that was quite elegant, I might add. We sold not only, you know, what I offered and other readers for them, but they also sold very expensive items that they imported from places around the world, and jewelry and crystals and what have you. So this is the shop that I'm working in, and I'm coming along quite well. Chad is a little entrepreneur in the quarter. He's making a good name for himself. And we're doing quite well, and we're now living in a very beautiful townhouse. There's high strangeness involved with that as well. Now, we're up to 1997.
Mm-hmm.
The family hired this young woman that's known as Christine in the book. At the
right.
time, she's 24. I had just turned 40. Chad was 30, to give you an idea of age perspective. From the moment I met her,
right.
I felt like I'd known her forever. I had no sense of an age difference between us. I am a very young, I always have been a very young, whatever age I was, right? Yeah, whatever age they call me.
Uh-huh.
And so I just never had a sense of there being any age difference between her and I. So now we're in May of 1997. It's about to become my 40th birthday.
It's the big year.
Remember earlier? That's right, the big year. So you can imagine I'm beside myself. I'm just so excited. I can't hardly wait.
Right.
And I've got everybody around me in that excitement. And so, as they say, be careful what you wish for, because my mother is about to move. She left Louisiana, relocated herself back to Little Rock, Arkansas, when Chad and I had moved to the French Quarter. Her health was very poor. She had come to visit us in the quarter, and she loved it. She wanted to move there, and we wanted her to move there because we knew she wasn't well. She loved Chad. He loved her. We were all going to take care of each other and just live out our lives. That was not meant to be. My mom died on my 40th birthday. To the minute I'm born, she was pronounced.
Wow.
It was beyond shock. Chad and I had to go long distance and then try to handle. I was useless. Chad, you know, was able to help when I could not. We had to handle her affairs.
Hmm.
We returned to New Orleans, and I kind of throw myself into work. Chad's managing better than I am, but he's suffering also. He's just managing better. So I'm falling into a deep slump, but I'm working very hard, so that's keeping me going. Christine knew, of course, of this terribleness that had happened in our lives, and she'd asked me one night if I wanted to go out into the quarter and have dinner and drinks, and I accepted. I told her, I said, let's call Chad, because I know how bad he'd want to join us. We only lived a couple of blocks from the shop at the time, so we called Chad, and he, you know, is ready to join us. He walks over. We leave the shop. She closes the shop and locks the door at 9:30. That's how we know what time this evening began.
Okay.
So basically, our night is 9:30 from the moment we stepped out of the shop. It's the three of us. We discover, I note very quickly that the energy is off. It felt weird. And I remember making note of that. I said it out loud, like, feels weird out here. Well, I don't remember going around normally saying things like that. So I do remember taking note of it that night. Uh-huh. I remember them kind of acknowledging it, me as well. So we take off and we're going to have a spontaneous night. We have no plans. We're just going to stop wherever we please, do as we choose and what have you. So again, to kind of speed the story up a little bit, we stop at three locations across the French Quarter in these 13 blocks. We start on the famous Bourbon Street. We're going to just cross all the way across to the other end of the quarter. From the moment we started our night, we knew it was off. But by the time we got to Bourbon, that's a street that's never quiet,
right?
Even when it's quiet in the town. Well, there's no people. There are what I call a few stragglers, but there's no people. And I'm still in shock as I'm repeating it 20 years later. It's like, where is everybody? This is so weird. Where is everybody? What's going on? And so we stop at these three different locations. There's high strangeness involved in the first location, quite a bit of high strangeness. We then, you know, stop at two more locations. And each location we stop at, there's no people. There's, if the locations had clubs, restaurants, dance club, there's no wait staff. There are no patrons. There's no customers. There's no nobody except either a manager or a bartender in each of these places that we stopped. We get across the quarter. We're at our last location. It's the same story. Now, at this point, I'm not thinking anything paranormal. I'm just thinking, this is ridiculous. I am so bored. I just want to go home. I get Chad kind of off away from our friend a few feet, and I'm basically telling Chad, Chad, I'm so bored. I just want to go home. And he's in agreement with me. We all three remember collectively it's 11 o'clock, somewhere exactly around 11 o'clock at night. So we also three collectively remember that we had no alcohol and we had no drugs. And we make note of the fact that there didn't even seem to be anybody around to drug us kind of language, just sure, to get people to imagine this. So that's the last thing the three of us remember is 11 o'clock. Now, I had a complete different experience than Chad and our friend. Chad seems to have had a complete different experience than myself. There's the possibility our friend was involved with him, but we're not even sure of that. Then I'll also mention our friend's account of what happened to her is stranger to me almost than what happened to us.
Sure.
So we'll kind of go where you like. I'm the only one out of the three that seemed to be returned with memory of the in-between. And I seem to be the only one out of the three returned with an object in my upper arm.
Okay. Let's start, Chad, if you could tell a little bit about yours, and then maybe, Alta, you can fill in the blanks, since you seem to remember a little bit more than everyone else.
Perfect.
Yeah, you know, again, I remember that night being very strange, just like Alta described. Now, again, I had regression done a couple of years after that, and in my regression, what I remember is, we're standing on that stoop. Our friend comes back and joins us where we were standing. We were kind of mid-block standing, and Alta was sitting on a stoop. I was standing, and our friend comes down to join us. I turn around and look around. I turn around and look, and I could see this bright light coming from around the corner, and I could kind of see it through the glass of the shop that we were next to. And I get the girl's attention, and we walk around the corner, and there's this orb of light, and it's probably about 12 foot in diameter. It's about 15 foot off the street, and it's about a half a block down the street.
And that's significantly different than what you saw years before. Hovering above that Walmart, correct? That's very different.
Oh, yeah. Oh, very, very. I mean, totally not even close.
Okay.
I mean, just this orb of light, it was just this bright white ball of light energy, just white, and it was beautiful. I mean, it was just this clean, clear, oh, well, not clear, but you know, because it had this whiteness to it, but just clean energy, just awesome. And we sat there and looked at it for maybe 30 seconds, probably not even that. And it just comes towards us and just kind of engulfs us. It abducts us. And my next memory is I'm walking down this corridor. It kind of gently turns to the right. The walls and the ceiling and the floors and everything is like this metallic gun-colored, you know, gun-toned metal.
Sure.
No rivets, no bolts, no seams, just very clean, smooth. I'm following this little being that's in front of me, and he's probably about 3.5-4 foot tall. You know, he's got this big bulbous head, and it's kind of this pale gray skin color. As I was following him, he was wearing this skin tight one piece jumpsuit kind of looking thing. Now he had substance to him. He wasn't like the grays that you see on TV. He kind of waddled when he walked. He was dwarfish.
Okay.
You know, like a small person. Out of the corner of my eye to my left, I could see a tall blonde female walking beside me. Now, I didn't turn to look. This does describe our friend that was with us, but I didn't turn to look to see if it was her, so I'm not sure who or what it was.
Gotcha.
My next memory is I'm in this room, and it just seems infinite. It just seems so huge. It's very, very dark. I could see my immediate around me, and then off in the distance to my left, there were three beings around her, one on each side and one at her head. They were very tall. They were like 7, probably 8 foot tall. big bulbous heads, but more kind of praying mantis-y kind of shaped. You know, not, and again, their eyes weren't like up on the top of their head like a praying mantis. They were more kind of, you know, towards the middle of their face. Had almond-shaped eyes, very small mouths, very close down to their chin. Their arms were kind of crooked like a mantis. They were wearing these kind of cloaks, kind of like a Grim Reaper without the hoodie or a Jesuit priest or something like that. You know? Again, one on each side, one at her head. She never seemed to be in distress or anything like that. Almost like she was either, you know, comatose or, you know, suspended animation, something, you know. There's no movement, no anything. I focus my attention back to my immediate. And when I turn and I look to my right, there's this little blue being. And he looks a lot like the grays that you see on TV. You know, the big bulbous head, almond-shaped eyes, very small slit for the mouth. But his skin tone was this just bright, electric, vibrant blue. And his aura, his presence, was that of like a professor slash shaman slash scientist, healer, you know, just this ancient, just, you know.
Right.
Mega knowledge. Just, I mean, it's just. And he goes over and he picks up this box and he has it in his right hand. He takes his left hand and puts it into the side of the box. And when he pulls it out, his left hand out, there's this substance and it's kind of free floating above his head or above his hand a couple of inches. And it's kind of just undulating there. It looks kind of like that stuff the kids play with, that slime stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it's contained. It's kind of. About maybe a quarter or a half a dollar size. It's blue, the same color he is. It's got little metal kind of glittery flakes in it. He takes his right hand. I don't even remember him setting the box down. But he takes his right hand, and he's only got four digits. So, but he takes his two middle fingers and puts them up. Almost kind of like in a peace sign. And then his outer fingers folded in towards his palm. You know, almost like when you see the depictions of Christ or Buddha or something like that.
Sure.
And when he does that, this substance starts spinning. And the faster it spins, the blueness and the metal, the glittery stuff kind of dissipate out of it. And it's rotating around it. And it starts slowing down. And when it kind of just going, you know, going pretty slow, and it had turned into this double pointed crystal, pyramid shaped crystal.
Huh.
Very clear, very clean. It, again, still free floating a couple of inches above his hand. And I remember thinking to him, you know, why are you showing this to me? I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. This is something very important. And he told me that I would know in time or when it's time. Again, this is all, you know, through our mind, you know, telepathic or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
My next memory is I'm in this other room, two that are very, and there's only three walls, two that are very straight, one that's kind of concaved. And again, the walls are very metallic, no rivets, no bolts, no seams, very smooth. And there's this overstuffed leather chair in the middle of this room. And I remember thinking to myself, one, how out of place it looks, futuristic looking, and here's this overstuffed leather chair. And it looks comfortable, but it's not. So I never sat in it or anything like that. I walk a little closer to the wall that's kind of concave. And what I thought was a solid wall are, you know, I get a little closer and I can see through it. You know, it's like this big, huge wall window. The whole, you know, the wall is probably maybe 15 foot long, 10 foot high, and it's just this big wall window. And I could see stars and planets, and, you know, it's like I'm out in a galaxy somewhere.
Sure.
You know, just like you can imagine. And I'm sitting there kind of in awe, kind of looking and watching, and all of a sudden this little craft just right outside this wall window shoots past from left to right. And it gets about 10 foot past me, and it stops. And it comes back, and it's like right there in front of my face, and, you know, on the other side of this wall window. And it's kind of a rugby shape or football shape. And it's probably about 3 foot long, about 2 foot wide. It's got little blinky lights on it and little wires and antennas kind of moving and shuffling around. And I could feel intelligence coming out of it. It was almost like it was doing a double take. You know, it's only, it's like, it was surprised to see me as I was it. And it sat there for like 30 seconds, you know, 45 seconds, and then shoots off back the way it was going. And my next memory is waking up in bed the next morning.
Very weird. And all of those memories came through regression. You didn't have any of that before you went through that process?
Right. I had nothing.
Okay. Nothing. Very interesting. Now, Alta, your story is a little bit different. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, right. So the last memory is on the street corner saying, I want to go home. Next thing I know, I'm now standing on the edge of a crater. To just paint the picture for you, I look like I'm standing in the middle of a black and white movie of the so-called moon landings. That's the best way I know how to describe my environment. There is no other color other than black, white, gray, metallic, and blonde. I'm looking down in this very large crater. There are orbs of light that are around the perimeter of this crater that are the size of, they're white orbs. They are the size of, just a fast guesstimate, double watermelon sizes. That go all the way around the perimeter, almost as if they're the lighting source. They also seem to be intelligent to me. And as I go further along in years past having this experience, it's almost again like that's been made clear in my mind, whether I'm creating that or not. But it seemed there was intelligence to these orbs. A movement or activity of any kind. What I am seeing, though, is a metallic structure that's rectangle-shaped, fairly large, like a big hangar or a big warehouse or a big craft. I have no idea. As I said, it's pretty benign because, again, there's no movement or anything like that, and everything is happening very fast. As I'm trying to take that in, all of a sudden I'm aware that there's something behind me. So I don't completely turn around. I just somewhat pivot around, and several feet behind me are what appear to be human people in what I call a dog pile. They are not distressed. There's no sound. They seem to be in suspended animation. They're all dressed. They're male and female, and they're of different ages. I think there's a young person in this mix, as well as an older man. I have no idea what in the world that's about.
Yeah.
But before I can even, before I can even do anything about that, I am now aware that there's something standing right next to me on the edge of that crater. So I pivot back around, and now everything changes for me just like that, meaning I'm with her. Now the her is, I don't care who she is. I don't have any questions. I don't, just to give you the fast, I'm instantly so happy to be with her that I don't care about anything else.
Is she the lady on the back of the book?
Right. Well, she's the artist's rendition of.
Okay,
right.
Sure. Right, right, right. Okay.
Right. She's over 6 foot tall. And I've said this before, and I mean this so sincerely. I had no idea that this was my idea of perfection until I'm having this experience. Hmm. In the experience, she is my idea of perfection. She is wearing a form-fitted bodysuit so you can see every ounce of her, and she's perfectly proportioned. She's over 6 foot tall. I have to put my head back some to look up at her. She has long blonde hair, and she's just perfect. And not only on the outer, but what's coming out of her, the energy that seems to be coming out of her. I'm just so joyous to be with her. And I've said this before as well. If I'm a puppy, I've got a tail and it's wagging off because I'm just so happy, like a child. And like Chad's saying, I've said before, I'm home. Yeah. I knew whatever home was, I was there. And so then I look up further above both of us up into the sky, and it's a big, beautiful black sky with what appear to be, you know, they appear to be stars, but they are like the, as, you know, maybe cheesy as this sounds, they look like the diamonds in the sky. They look like diamonds. Hmm. And now I'm beside myself. I'm so excited. I mean, it's just, what more could one ask for? And in that, as I'm describing these emotions, I'm falling up into that, and I'm so happy to be with her. And then all of a sudden, one of those diamonds, those stars, began to move. And it started to move, like, across, and then some zigzag, and then others joined in. And as this started to happen, I'm instantly going from a state of this childlike bliss to, I use the word terror, just to get the attention of how extreme my emotion shifted. And I've said this before as well. If there is such a thing as logic when you're having something like this happening to you, logic kicked in when that began to move. And my logic said, stars don't do that. Hmm. And then instantly I am terrified. My heart feels like it's going to pound out of my chest. And in that same transaction, she speaks to me telepathically in a tone that I never could not even imagine ever being able to duplicate or ever hear again. It's so beautiful. And she calls me by name. She speaks English. And she says, Alta, don't be afraid. They're just scanning you. And those are the words that I remember very clearly her stating to me telepathically. And that is the last thing that I know. The next thing I know, I'm not waking up. I'm coming to. And I'm sitting straight up in the living room of my house, and it's the next day. The sun is blaring through my window. I'm cross-legged, and I am rubbing my arms. My eyes popped open, and I'm going through every emotion that one can imagine and then some. And as it's all flashing in front of me, I've got something in my upper arm. Now, also, where is Chad and where is our friend? And I'm just going through unbelievable trauma.
Yeah.
Trying to hang on. So that, you know, that was my actual experience, memory of that night. I have no memory of coming off the street, and I have no memory at all of being returned home. I don't, you know, I realize that time must be short, but if there is time, and certainly if there's not, we understand, but our friend has chosen not to come forward, probably very wisely. She knows something happened, but she has just always chosen to stay quiet over this. But she has given us permission, and I've gotten it in writing, to speak on her behalf about what she does, what she is able to recall about that experience.
Yeah, I mean, we have, listen, this is the internet, so we can do what we want.
Absolutely.
So feel free to dive into that. That'd be really interesting to hear all three stories.
Accounts.
Well, I thank you very much for that. If I might, then, I'd like to back up prior to that night of the three of us. The very shortly, I have no idea exactly, I can't recall exactly how long prior to us being what we call taken that night, our friend I would say it was days or just weeks prior to that night, she was dating a guy very briefly, just like for a minute in her life. His name was Will. He happened to be her, what I considered polar opposite. She's tall, slender, long blonde hair, very attractive, pretty, a very non-drama kind of chick that had a very gregarious laugh, and she's, you know, got a joyous spirit, but she also has a very definite system of right and wrong in her mind, and she's got no drama to her that I can recall. She decides she doesn't want to see him any longer as a boyfriend, so she decides to invite him over to her place. It's daytime, and she lives in a duplex. They're on the front porch. He's only a couple inches in front of her face. She claims that when she's saying, "I like your butt" kind of story, that's sort of me paraphrasing it. She says he starts to get so upset and emotional, but it's like it's emotional from the inside out as well. And she said, again, if it was coming out of anybody else, because as I said to you, Chad and I feel, are extremely skeptical, as bizarre as that sounds, with what we are explaining to you that we have been experiencing. And if it would have come from anyone else, I would so question what I had been told. But it came from her, and I don't question her. She said that he turned into a wolf.
Whoa.
She said, right. She said she shifted her head away from him instantly. Now, I could probably be one of the only few that could really understand what she meant by that, because that's what I did when I saw, I call it the floating city in 95 above our heads. My head turned away from it instantly. I was in shock. And I felt like my brain exploded, whatever that means. Well, she did too. Her head turned away instantly in shock. She said when she turned her head back, he must have shifted back to human, and then he shifted a second time. So in essence, it's a shapeshifter into this wolf. She said she called him on it the second time in a very stern voice. I will clean up the language. You just turned into a wolf. And she said that he responded in a very startled voice. You saw that. So not that she needed proof. She knows what she saw, and I believe what she saw. Now, that was just briefly prior to us being taken. Now, the night we're taken, her story is she remembers 11, like Chad and I, on the corner. The next thing she knows, it's somewhere between 3 and 4 in the morning. So she's got those hours completely gone. She's now behind the steering wheel of her moving car. It's moving slowly. It hit a parked car, and it knocked off her rear view mirror. She claims that this is what jolted her too. The car is in a whole other section of the city from where she parked the car that morning. It's miles away from where she parked that morning, and it seems to be heading to Wolfie Boy's house. That is what I have labeled him, Wolfie Boy. Right. I guarantee you, knowing her as well as we know her, he's her or whatever Wolfie Boy she'd ever want to see again in her life. Well, that's where she's going. It's in a bad neighborhood, someplace she does not belong at 3 or 4 in the morning, a girl all by herself. He lives in a split level, sounds like a big house that's been converted into apartments, old. It's got a big iron gate thing, fence around it. It's normally locked, and of course not on this morning, it's open. She claims she goes up the porch. He's right inside the front door. Either the door is wide open and it's a screen door, it's just wide open. He's playing guitar. She says that she steps up in the house. He stops playing guitar. He looks at her and he says, either I've been or we've been waiting for you. She said that she becomes hysterical. Now, it's a very strong statement from her to us, because we don't remember ever seeing her dramatic or hysterical about anything. So she claims she becomes, you know, like a controlled hysterical cry. And he puts down the guitar. He walks her into a room, lays her down. She said that she wakes up, she feels, you know, just before the sun is coming up. So it's probably only an hour or so that she's in there. And she says she's completely dressed. It doesn't appear that he's done anything to her. She says she gets up and gets the, you know, what up, ever out of Dodge and doesn't look back. So this is her account of that crazy night. But if I can, again, just for the context of this story, fast forward you now. This takes place in 97. Let's go to 2001.
Sure.
Chad and I have, I use the term imploded. We have come completely apart. Chad has chose to leave New Orleans and go to Alabama where his family lived. He's going to go to work for his dad. I've chose to stay behind, and we basically are separating.
Hmm.
He and I, make our separation. I start falling apart. I'm not doing well at all, but I'm, again, throwing myself into work. That's what's keeping me going, but I'm just not doing well. I get out of work one afternoon, and the streets are busy like normal, and it happens to be a beautiful afternoon, and it's daytime, and I hear somebody yell my name across this little crowd. So when I look, it's this very tall guy I have not seen in a few years, who happens to be originally from Montauk, New York. I've often said this. I knew nothing about Montauk, New York in 2001, but I have devoted my life to researching what is happening to Chad and I, and I know a lot about that area now, and that's a very interesting, peculiar place. So this friend, he happens to be a traveling artist. Well, he wants to, sit and have a drink. So we sit at an outdoor cafe. He orders a Coke. I think I got a beer. I have no memory of drinking the beer even, because the way this conversation went was so bizarre. He's rolling a cigarette. He's hearing me tell him about Chad and I separating. He seems extremely distressed, very interested in what's happening to him and I. And then out of nowhere, he shifts the conversation from Chad and Alta to, hey, have you heard about Will? And I'm like, first of all, shocked. And I said, Will? Dark Boy? How do you know him? No. What do you mean? Have I heard about him? Now, I'm just blown completely away. This is, again, coming out of left field. I had no idea he knew me. It's not that strange because New Orleans, French Quarter is fairly small and most artists seem to know each other, but I just never put the two together.
That's the Wolf, correct? The Wolf Boy?
Right, Wolfie Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, his name is Will. Yep, Wolfie Boy. And so I'm like, what about Will? And he said, yeah, he's going around telling everybody he's got to catch a bus because he's got to leave town because the aliens are after him. So the point of all of that is, once that was said to me, I was no longer thinking anything. I don't know that I ever was paranormal. I'm at that point getting very angry inside because I'm looking for cameras because I'm positive I'm on somebody's really, really horrible candid camera show and the joke is on me because I cannot wrap my brain around what he has just said to me. And it was very shortly after he made this statement to me, he hugged me and off he went. just as bizarre as how I just repeated it to you. So That's that story, the beginning, middle, end, to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah.
And Chad and I have often said to each other, what the hey, this guy supposedly can shapeshift into a wolf, but he's got to catch a bus because the aliens are after
right.
him. I mean, just such a badly written movie.
Right.
And yet it is our truth as we understand it.
Hmm.
Well, if I was an alien and I was going to get one of the humans on Earth, I'd pick with a werewolf, for sure.
Exactly.
Now,
exactly.
You guys say that you're skeptics. Looking back over this whole thing, you have your stories and you're trying to make sense of it all. What do you make of it now, 2017, quite a few years removed? What do you make of it as skeptics, but also as two people that actually went through this. This is, like you said, this is your truth, your reality. So what do you make of it now? What do you think happened?
Well, it has never stopped. So, it seems to be an ongoing in one form or another for us. As of most recently, just what, this last year, Chad? Is it last year? A year or so ago. We've lost a little bit of time by moving back to New Orleans, it seems like, this last year. But just prior to us returning here, Chad and I bought a motor home, gave up our home. We reunited in 2001. Chad came and got me, and I moved to with him in Alabama. We spent 11 years in Alabama, having a lot of very strange experiences, me in particular. But we also discovered, as you mentioned in the beginning, it does seem to run in the families, because Chad's family have also encountered UFOs and Sasquatchy. Hmm. I call them that again. You hear, I kind of baby up some of the language just to take the scary out of some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they have their own accounts. Now, they will never go public with any of this. It's nothing they'll even discuss. But they certainly shared it with Chad. And so, you know, we've had lots and lots of stuff happening to us. I've had another experience where I have another object that's in my wrist that seems to be very different than the first object that's in my upper arm that the X-ray should have of. So I'll have Chad share whatever his thoughts are about.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know. You know, in the beginning, I thought it was more, you know, something that a scientist or, you know, it was more electric or power, you know, related. And now I'm more thinking that it was something to do with healing energy, and that, you know, almost the healing and the energy kind of that way. But as far as do I know what's going on, I know there's a lot of things that are happening as far as a lot of other people too. And it has opened up my eyes that, you know, there is the possibility, or there is other something, dimensions or things out into the sky or whatever. There's...
And mine is very frustrating. I've discovered for most people who are kind enough to even hear us and ask us these questions, my response is, always been consistently, and I am true to say, I am clueless. I'm clueless.
Yeah.
I don't even broach any longer. I don't even broach any thoughts on that. I have any idea what in the world is going on, because I don't.
Yeah. I love your story. I'm really thankful you spent so much time with us. I want to make sure that we don't leave with any questions. So Dave, do you, before we let him go, do you have any questions about the story that you might want to have answered?
I only one, just to kind of wrap up on the implants part. Cause I don't know if you even know if we touched on the original, I don't know if we mentioned how you got the first one, but I know you woke up from the first abduction with the implant, and you say you got a second one, but do you have any memories associated with getting the second one, or is that just something that showed up?
Oh no, I have full memory of that experience. And the second object, now I use the word unknown. This has always been my language with the objects, because I've never had any memory of them being implanted. For all that I know, they've always been there.
Oh, gotcha.
Until something tells me, or I have memory, or what have you, I just try to get people to open their minds like I've been forced to do, just to, you know, give more context to all of this as the possibility. So anyhow, the second unknown, I have all memory of that. The only thing I don't have, again, just like the first experience, is in the second experience, I'm taken out of bed with Chad. We're living in Alabama. I'm put in my backyard. Now, I don't have any memory of being taken out of bed, but I have full memory of all of a sudden I'm standing in my backyard and I'm wide awake. And immediately there's something right next to me that comes only about thigh high. And it's very dark in my backyard, but I look down and I can see something. Standing right almost up against me, that the best way I know how to describe it is a cousin it. Like a cousin
it. Oh, man.
Right. I giggled just repeating it because, it happened so fast. And it was like.
I can see why you, like, it's easier for you to come up with more child-friendly terms because that sounds terrifying.
Cousin it doesn't sound so bad.
Kids, cousin, it doesn't sound so bad, but just a furry little creature in your backyard next to you sounds terrifying.
You know, one minute my furry creature's in bed with me, my husband, and the next thing I know, it's, you know, fly high, and it's right next to me in my backyard, and it's like, what the?
Oh, man.
And so I'm just in what the thought as I'm looking down trying to get my night vision goggles going in my head because I can't see. But I see this.
Right.
I see this. I don't see it furry necessarily, but that's the expression that it was giving me.
Right.
And then as I'm trying to grasp that in my mind, all of a sudden I hear her. And it's her. And it's that voice.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, that voice is speaking to me out of the heavens above my head. And up to the left a little bit, but way up in the heavens, way up in the sky. And it's her, or it sounds just like her, but she's not speaking a language I can even understand. I have no idea what she is saying. But again, I don't care. I just want to get to her. That's all I'm thinking about is how do I get up there?
Sure.
And right, again, just like a child. And then about the time I'm going into that emotion, now above my head and to the right, again, same level, way up there in the heavens, is a male voice. And it's a father figure kind of sounding voice. And he sounds pissed off at me. Now I'm going from this state of ecstasy again to, like a child, my knees are knocking and I think I'm about to be spanked. It's that kind of emotion. And he sounds angry. It's the tone. It's very angry sounding. Or put out. Let me say it like that. Like he's perturbed with me. And he calls me by name. And he says in this very perturbed tone, Alta, don't bother being afraid. Now they scare the poop right out of me. And then chastise me for scaring me to death is what right. I'm getting at this expression. As this happens, I immediately, my wrist exploded in light.
Mm.
Now, I say exploded. There was no pain. There was no abrasion, no blood, nothing like that. But the most beautiful light is blasting out of my wrist. That's how it appeared. As if I had a light bomb explode in my wrist. Next thing I know, back in bed. It's the next morning. I wake Chad up and I make it very clear to Chad that I know that I have another object in my wrist. Sometime later, just to wind that story up, I had a friend come by my home that had an ultrasound machine. She was an ultrasound tech and she traveled with the machine. And she knew that I claimed to have this object in my wrist and I'm pretty sure she thought I was nuts. But she cared enough about me to either prove I was nuts or what have you, to come by my home unexpected and had me lay down on my couch and she scanned my wrist. And her words were, I heard a bit of a gasp come out of her. She's not a gasping kind of girl. And she said, Alta, I couldn't write a report for a doctor if I had to. Whoever or whatever, put that there. I believe that's the kind of language she was using. It's there, but it won't cast a shadow. That's impossible. Huh. Now, that's all I had here. And she never really had much to do with this after that. We've lost a lot of people over this. So it has not been, it hasn't been, you know, we may sound pretty dreamy about some of this and what have you, but it has been a very interesting journey.
Yeah.
And again, your kindness, both of you, for skeptics, we are so grateful to both of you. You're both just wonderful. And we've just really both enjoyed this time with both of you, sharing with you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Just to follow up real quickly, have you
more than just the ultrasound, have you gone to a doctor to maybe get an x-ray or something to have some professional look at it? Or do you not really feel like you need that? You know what it is. You know what that is there. You don't need a doctor to give you approval of it.
Right. Well, that's a whole, those are lots of books just all in that question that had been edited out, and a lot has been removed of what we have been put through over this object in my arm. So many, again, I'll try to phrase this as quickly as I know how. Back in about 2002, I'm living in no man's land, Alabama, out in the rural countries of Alabama with no help and obviously nowhere to turn. Southern Baptist, nowhere to turn with this. I find a book at a bookstore when they still had them, and it was called Alien and a Scalpel. It was written by a doctor, Roger Lear. I get the book immediately thinking, oh my God, you know, what in the world is, what in the world? I cannot believe this book has this title on it. And I'm like looking around, like, is anybody seeing me looking at this book? Because I just can't believe this. So I get this little book and I discover we got one human being in the whole world at the time who is noted for supposedly removing these implants and studying them. Well, I got to get to him. So we make contact with each other long distance. He requires x-rays in order to even talk to us. Obviously he lives in California. I'm in Alabama. We went through unbelievable stuff to get those x-rays. I got them. I got the x-ray sent to the doctor. He sends me back a quick message telling me I've got to get a second x-ray. I tell the doctor we've gone through, and I tell him some of what we've been put through. He doesn't care. He makes it clear that I've got to get that second picture. We go through unbelievable stuff to get the second picture. I finally get the second x-ray. By the time we get the second x-ray, that doctor decides he doesn't want to work with us. Now, there's a very clear explanation that we've not generally ever gone public about. It is about him, not about us. And we've chosen, for the most part, not to go public with the bad behavior of so many of these humans that are involved in this business. But we have been having the misfortune, if you will, I guess, of being on the wrong end of a lot of it. So needless to say, that doctor dropped us, didn't have interest in us, but I never stopped, and I've still never stopped. I got x-rays. I then, when I had the other object happen in my wrist, I decided to get new x-rays by another doctor. And so the first object in the upper arm takes a picture, but the object in my wrist will not x-ray. That only was detected on the ultrasound. I will say this also, that first doctor, just for you all to understand, because I've devoted my life to trying to understand what is going on here. And of course, I can't get answers. But I can tell you the behavior of these people that have created this industry around this. The doctor, now he has since passed on in the last couple of years.
Is that Roger Lear? Is that who you said, Roger Lear?
Right.
Yeah.
They required for each person involved in this project that you had to sign off all your rights to the unknowns, their words, implants. You no longer had access to them. Once they're removed, they take them over. I have huge issue with that. And now it's becoming quite a problem for the last patient of Dr. Lear's, known as patient 17. So if you all are interested, check out this young man named Jeremy Corbell, who's a little movie maker who got involved in this business. And he has just, I believe he's releasing this documentary in October. He's not choosing to deal with us either. I have no idea why nobody wants to talk to us or deal with us. But I try not to take it personally. We just continue to keep moving forward with what we can do. But Jeremy is about to release this new movie, this documentary called Patient 17. And this happens to be the last man that Dr. Lear removed an implant from. They need that implant back to do studies on this because they've discovered a lot of anomalies about that object, but that object no longer is accessible to them. It's being protected and guarded, and it's the man that this comes out of, the body it comes out of, has no more access to. So, you know, you all might want to take note of that and explore that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's super helpful.
Yeah, we just can't get very far without people knowing these things. So thanks again for allowing us to share that with you.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else that you want to share for any of our listeners that they could kind of follow with your story or ways that they could find out more about you or what you guys are doing with any future books?
Oh, definitely. Well, we do have our Facebook page, so please give us a like or follow us however you like. It's same as the book title, Abducted in the French Quarter. If you have an experience or just want need someone to talk to, you can just send us a message through that. You can purchase our book there. We have an Etsy page that I have posted there, and then or you can contact me direct, and we can go through PayPal. We're also October 19th. We'll be doing a book signing. This is on the 800 block of Royal Street there in the French Quarter. It's a place.
Cool.
It's a gallery called Gallery 2, and this lady heard us on one of our shows, one of our broadcasts, and invited us to do a book signing there. But she does kind of UFO art, and it's just an amazing, beautiful gallery.
And we'd like to invite you both anytime. Please, if you ever get an opportunity to come back, please come back and let us show you. You know, Chad and I are the first that I'm aware of to come forward publicly in print about this happening in the French Quarter. And then the word abducted, being real hard to try to get into the lexicon, because we know there are a lot of people out there who have had orbit experiences, and we'd like them to know, you know, that we're here. So if you ever get an opportunity to come and visit, please give us a heads up, and we'd love to meet you and show you. And Chad's a wonderful tour guide for the quarter. And he's a oyster shucker, and he loves seafood. So if that's your thing, he's very good at all of it.
We're both from Florida, so we're real. Well, I don't know if Brandon's really an oyster
awesome.
Boy, but.
Yeah,
awesome.
Not so much, but I'd be happy to hang out.
Yeah.
Well,
in the meantime, though, you guys stay safe, all right? So what's going on there? Make sure that you guys are out of the way of the storm.
Thank you. Please, all of you, keep us in your highest thoughts, because it is getting pretty dicey in this direction. So not only for our sakes, but certainly all the folks that are here that have just been through too much already. So
absolutely.
Again, huge appreciation to both of you. We can't thank you enough, and we wish you the best. We'll sure let the world know you exist, and the invitation always. Please let us know if you come this direction.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Alton. Thank you, Chad. And big thank you to Chad and Alta Dillard, Abducted in the French Quarter. Dave, what do you think of that?
It's a lot to take in there, Bran.
A whole lot.
Like this, I mean, the abduction alone is insane. But then there's just like so much backstory that is just. I really recommend people read the book. It's a fun read, and also. It really is easier to kind of like take all that in, because it's, I can't imagine what it really was like to hear all that at one time, just like all that information story. But it's a quick book too. Like she said in the beginning, they did a kind of shortened version of it, so it's a quick read.
It is a quick read.
One evening.
I'll say this: we get a book here and there occasionally for hosting the show. This was the most fun read. Of the ones that I've done from the, like, you know, books are cool. They, lots of times with UFO and alien books, they're missing the personal and the life. Like, they take a lot of that out of it, because they're coming from oftentimes a scientific approach, which is totally cool. But I love this because it's a story, and it's a fun one at that. So I can't say it enough. You can get the book. I think it's in the bio of this episode, Dave.
Indeed, indeed.
Dave, it's good to be back. It's good to be with you. And I can't wait for this season of Star Time. It's going to be a good one.
Brian?
Mm-hmm.
You are my comrade.
You are mine as well. I'll see you next week, buddy.
Later, Snit.
From
Greenville, South Carolina.
And New York.
This has been the Star Time Podcast with Brian.
And Neil.